This is your Polycast for Monday, February 13th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, high-risk pools may not be a fix for the insurance market. People in Chisago County go to the polls tomorrow to fill a vacant seat in the Minnesota House. The contest in District 32B is between Democrat Lori Warner and Republican Ann New. Both candidates live in North Branch. The special election was needed after the state Supreme Court ruled last September that incumbent Republican Representative Bob Barrett did not live in the district. Both parties are working hard for their candidates, but Minnesota Republican Party Chair Keith Downey says the result is less consequential than it might have been.
Obviously, with the strong results that we had back in November, it doesn't have any influence on the House majority, and so it probably isn't drawing as much attention, certainly, as it would have had it been the difference maker between majorities.
DFL Chair Ken Martin has a different take.
We're at an existential moment for the DFL in this state. If we don't win the governor's race, we're going to be just like the state of Wisconsin. So we have to make sure that we win.
Republicans currently hold a 76-57 advantage over Democrats in the state House. Some Republicans looking to scrap the Affordable Care Act are calling for a return of what are called high-risk health insurance pools. The goal is to hold down premiums for people who buy non-group insurance. But as Mark Sedeklik reports, experts say high-risk pools create their own problems.
For many Obamacare opponents, the solution to the skyrocketing cost of individual and family health plans lies in creating two separate pools of people, one for those with expensive illnesses that drive up health spending, and another for lower-cost, healthy people. Here's Republican Speaker of the House Paul Ryan making the case on public television's Charlie Rose show.
By having taxpayers, I think, step up and focus on, through risk pools, subsidizing the care for people with catastrophic illnesses, those losses don't have to be covered by everybody else, and we stabilize their plans.
Minnesota's newest congressman, Republican Jason Lewis, who represents the 2nd District, endorsed high-risk pools on CNN.
Minnesota had one of the best insurance pools, high-risk pools, in the country, and it was undone by the ACA.
It's true that Obamacare banned state high-risk pools, including the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association, or MCHA. These government-sponsored programs sold health insurance to people other health plans refused to cover. That kept high-cost people out of the general insurance market and helped hold down premiums. Supporters tout a return to that approach as a smart way to bring down premiums.
I think that's a lot of baloney.
Craig Britton of Plymouth was forced to buy MCHA coverage because of a pancreatitis diagnosis. He paid more than $18,000 a year in premiums.
That is catastrophic cost.
Minnesota State Health Economist Stefan Gildemeister says there's no disputing high-risk pool insurance is expensive.
It's not cheap coverage to the individual, and it's not cheap coverage to the system.
MCHA premiums cost policyholders 25% more than conventional coverage. Gildemeister says some people who needed the coverage couldn't afford it.
So there were people out there who had a chronic disease or had a pre-existing condition who couldn't get a policy.
And Gildemeister says even the higher premiums fell far short of covering the full cost of insurance for the roughly 25,000 people on MCHA. The program needed more than $173 million in subsidies in its final year of normal operation. The money came from fees on commercial insurance plans. Researcher Karen Politz with the nonpartisan Kaiser Family Foundation says restoring high-risk pools sounds simple, but the economics are terrible.
The sickest 5% of people account for half of all healthcare spending in the entire population. So it is an expensive undertaking to segregate out people when they're sick and find another way to pay for their care.
State Health Department economist Stefan Gildemeister ran the numbers for a return to MCHA. Annual high-risk pool coverage for a 40-year-old would cost more than $15,000. The policyholder would pay about $6,000. The state would have to find more than $9,000 in subsidies. A national plan offered by Republican Speaker of the House Paul Ryan would fund high-risk pools with at least $25 billion over a decade. The nonpartisan Commonwealth Fund estimates it would cost much more than that, almost $180 billion per year. University of Minnesota health policy professor Lynn Blewett says there is a better alternative than a return to high-risk pools. It's called reinsurance, and it provides health plans with a financial buffer should they get nailed with higher-than-expected costs. The big question, Blewett says, is whether lawmakers will balk at the cost of stabilizing premiums, whatever the approach.
That's the kind of rub, is where that funding is going to come from, and is the federal government or the state government willing, you know, to put up the funding needed to make some of these fixes.
Researchers at the global consulting firm McKinsey & Company say a reinsurance program would be much less expensive than high-risk pools. They estimate reinsurance would stabilize premiums for about a third the cost of restoring high-risk pools. Covering healthcare, I'm Mark Zedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The ferry that connects Bayfield, Wisconsin with Madeline Island has announced it plans to run all winter long for the second year in a row. That's never happened before, and it's a dramatic example of the long-term decline in ice cover on Lake Superior. As Dan Crocker reports, the changing climate is having a big impact on everyday life in the Apostle Islands.
Usually by this time of year, the four Madeline Island ferries are getting some well-deserved rest and maintenance after another busy tourist season. But not this winter. Captain Shannon Major is steering the Island Queen through broken up sheets of ice on the 25-minute trip to the island.
It's only a couple inches thick. It froze back over the other night.
In most years, the ice is at least a foot thick by now, much too thick for the ferries to plow through. Usually machines called wind sleds run for a week or two when the ferries stop. But when the ice is thick enough, an ice road is formed between the island and the mainland, explains Mike Radke, Marine Operations Manager for the ferry line.
People used to be able to almost mark their calendar and say, the ferries will stop sometime around the first or second week of January, and then the ice road will come in maybe a week to 10 days after that.
But not anymore. Prior to 1999, the ferries never ran all the way through the winter. But in four out of the last 18 winters, the ice hasn't gotten thick enough to support vehicles. In two other years, the road was only open about a week.
And that's a pretty dramatic change.
I wanted to get a better idea of what that change means for people who live on Madeline Island. So when the ferry pulled up to shore with a bitter wind whipping off the lake, I met a guy named Michael Childers.
Dan, Michael, let's get out of the cold.
Childers and his husband own a small business called Madeline Island Candles in the first house off the ferry in the town of La Pointe.
Please come in.
Thank you.
They're among the 250 or so people who live on the island year-round.
It is an interesting rhythm of life. You're constantly aware of when's the next boat, when's the next boat.
The ferry is a lifeline for residents. It transports school kids, commuters, vehicles, and supplies back and forth to the mainland. But it operates on a strict schedule, and that's why Childress says the ice road is such a welcome change.
Because it is freedom. You can go when you choose, at night, at day, whenever you want.
But now that freedom seems to be melting away. Ice cover on Lake Superior has declined by nearly 80% since 1973, when federal researchers began keeping ice records. And thanks to an industrious high school student, the data for ice around Bayfield goes back much further than that. 10 years ago, a Bayfield teenager named Forrest Houck scoured old newspapers dating back to the 1850s, looking for ice in and ice out dates for a science project. The work was eventually peer-reviewed and published. His father, Neil Houck, says what they found was startling.
The average length of the ice season in the 1800s was closer to 120 days. And when we finished the study in 2007, the average length of the season was about 75 days. So a third of the season had gone away.
And that trend has continued in the past decade. Now, of course, there will continue to be cold winters with lots of ice on Lake Superior. Just think back to the polar vortex of 2014.
We're still going to have high ice years and low ice years. We're just going to see more and more of those low ice years.
Jay Austin is a physicist at the Large Lakes Observatory at the University of Minnesota Duluth. He's found that even small changes in air temperature can lead to significant changes in ice cover.
The difference between a year when there's basically no open lake ice and a winter with very little ice might be due to a difference in air temperature of as little as 2 to 3 degrees Fahrenheit.
And average winter temperatures in Minnesota have risen by about 1 degree per decade since the 1970s. If the current trend line continues, Lake Superior around Bayfield could be largely ice-free in about 20 years. And that would make life significantly different for Michael Childers.
If we move, as it appears we are, in a direction where we lose our ice road and our wind sled, a part of what has made life interesting and special here will go away.
And he says that would be a sadness for most Madeline Island residents. Covering the environment, I'm Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Bayfield, Wisconsin.
And that's your Polycast for this Monday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.